Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I'm super excited about today's show. We're talking to Susan Bass of Big Cat Rescue, one of the world's largest accredited sanctuaries for exotic cats. Big Cat Rescue is a leading advocate in ending the abuse of captive big cats and saving wild cats from extinction. They are home to about 100 lions, tigers, bobcats, cougars, servals, and other species. The sanctuary is located in Tampa, Florida, and it's open to the public so you can go visit. If you're a fan of watching videos, Big Cat Rescue has an incredibly popular YouTube page with 85 million views so far. Their channel is consistently ranked as one of the most watched nonprofit channels in the world. Find them at www.bigcattv.com. Susan Bass has been Director of Public Relations at Big Cat Rescue since 2011. Her primary role is expanding the reach of the sanctuary's advocacy work and developing strategies and initiatives to bring the issues of big cats in captivity and in the wild to the forefront of the public and media. Hey, Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for speaking to us. I have a million questions about what you guys do, and I'm so excited to talk to you. So I would just want to get started. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely. Fire away.
All right. So first question, what kind of cats does your rescue have, and are they wild or pets or...
Well, we have big cats, which are everything, as you said in the intro, from lions and tigers all the way down to little tiny cats that you've maybe never even heard of, such as sand cats or Joffrey cats. All of our cats are wild, whether they've been pets or not. You can never tame a wild cat, truly. Mm-hmm. So all of our cats are wild, and we treat them with the respect and dignity that wild cats deserve.
Nice. And how did this rescue get created?
It's a very interesting story, and if people want even more information, it's all about our evolution is on our website, bigcatrescue.org. Mm-hmm. But our founder and CEO, Carol Baskin, who's still very much involved with the sanctuary, started in 1992, not so much to start a sanctuary, but she and her first husband had about 45 acres of land in Tampa that they wanted to greenbelt, so they went to an animal auction to purchase llamas to keep on the land and, you know, sort of, you know, organic lawnmowers.
Yeah, really.
So as they were walking in, they saw a man coming out of the auction who had just purchased a bobcat, and she was looking concerned, and actually the man turned out to be a taxidermist.
Oh.
So you can kind of read between the lines that his plans for that bobcat.
Oh.
Yes. Carol was so upset about this that when she saw another man walking into the auction with the baby bobcat, she feared that this bobcat would have the same fate and possibly be purchased by a taxidermist. Mm-hmm. So she and her husband made sure they were the highest bidder.
Wow.
And that is how she sort of started out with her first wildcat.
Wow.
Yes.
And so, how was it discovered that there was a need for this?
Well, again, it took an evolution of thought. When Carol first got the bobcat, of course, she didn't know how to take care of a bobcat. And so the people that she turned to were those that already owned wildcats. Mm-hmm. for advice. And they told her a number of things such as, oh, these make great pets. This is a way to conserve animals that are diminishing in the wild.
Mm.
You know, everything like that. And, you know, they bond to people. If they're hand-raised, you can tame them. All these types of information, which turned out to be false.
Mm.
So the second part of the story is that with bobcats especially, they will bond to one person. So the very first bobcat bonded to Carol, but not to her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided, well, I want my own bobcat to love me. Kind of like, you know, somebody, you have a dog in your family and, you know, the dog loves one person more than the other. You're like, well, I want a new, another dog.
Totally.
Right. Very, very similar in that nature. And if you think about 1992, this was really pre-internet.
Yeah.
So they managed to do some research and find out that there was a place in Minnesota, very, very far from Florida, mind you, Minnesota, that sold bobcats and lynx kittens as pets. So she and her first husband drove all the way up to Minnesota to check out what the bobcats were. And when they got there, they realized they had unwittingly stumbled upon a fur farm.
Oh, my God.
Very similar to a puppy mill, if you will, for lynx and bobcats.
Wow.
And Carol looked at the owner and said, wow, you have so many cats and kittens here. I can't believe there's this much call for people to have these wild cats as pets. And he looked at her and said something to the effect of, oh, I'll just, you know, sell a few of them as pets. The rest of them, when they're a year old, they will become fur coats.
Wow.
So, again, Carol looked at her husband horrified, being the, obviously, cat lover that she is.
Yeah.
And she and her husband that day bought all 56 bobcat and lynx kittens
that the man had.
Yes.
Go, Carol. That's
all of them.
Wow.
And brought them home. I mean, they were like 3 and 4 weeks old at the time, so they were all tiny, and they got like every container they could find, along with Carol's daughter, and the three of them, you know, literally all the way home, and for the next few months had to bottle feed them every 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yes. And Carol also made sure that the man said he would no longer purchase more.
Wow.
Because that's one thing that we've found with people that ask us to take these cats off of their hands,
mm-hmm.
whether they're pets or they just no longer want them for various reasons, is that a lot of times they'll turn around and they'll go get another one.
Yeah.
So we were like, she was like, you know, even back then saying, okay, you know, I will take these kittens off your hands, but please, you know, never get any more.
Wow.
And so he agreed.
Wow.
So when she and her first husband brought the cats back, again, she was talking to people who bred them and said, oh, that's really profitable, and they make it great pets, la, la, la. So she started to sell them to people she knew.
Mm-hmm.
And she always told the people, though, if it ever comes a time where you no longer want this bobcat, I will take it back, because she could still have visions in her head of that auction where she saw the baby bobcat, you know, being, you know, killed outside the auctioneer place. So at first they were fine. Bobcats, just like, you know, pretty much any other animal, they're young, they're adolescent, they're manageable.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, or can be friendly. But then once they're about a year or two old, they come into, you know, adulthood. And whether they are neutered or spayed or not, they mark their territory every day repeatedly.
Oh.
You know, they do not make good pets, was what she quickly came around to the realization of.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, after about a year or two, everybody practically that she had, you know, sold these bobcat and lynx kittens to all brought them back. Here you go.
Oh, wow.
I cannot take care of it. It's literally eating the wallpaper off my wall.
Yeah.
You know, swinging from my ceiling fans, you know, because these cats can jump. They're wild animals. So the sanctuary and Carol pretty much done, you know, a 180 from thinking, okay, these make good pets and, you know, they can be bred for conservation, to realizing that there's absolutely zero justification to breed a wild animal for a lifetime in a cage, basically a jail cell.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And so where do you guys get your cats from?
We get them from a number of sources. Some of them we have are retired circus performers. A lot of them have been former pets that either, you know, every cat has a different story.
Yeah.
We actually have an app, if anyone's interested, and you can read and hear the audio version of every cat story, which is pretty interesting.
That's amazing.
You know, their birthday, when we rescued them, the circumstances of their rescue. Sometimes it's as simple as two people that have a serval, which is a small African cat that kind of looks like a mini leopard. So people think, ooh, this is cool. This would be a great pet. Yeah. Well, it doesn't make a good pet. But they might get to get divorced, or they're moving, or, you know, within the United States, there are a patchwork of state laws. Mm-hmm. Some laws are very strict. They say you cannot own certain types of cats in a certain state. Some states have absolutely no laws. And then there's a whole variety of other circumstances.
Wow.
We also get a lot of our cats from, you know, we save them from being turned into fur coats, similar to the story I just mentioned with from Minnesota, as well as we've had a few cats, primarily bobcats and also some cougar cubs, that hunters had shot their parents or mother, and, you know, the cubs were orphaned, and so we took them in.
Wow.
So really, every single case is a different story.
And do most of the cats that you have, like when you get them, are they people calling you and contacting you for help? Or do you ever have to go in and, you know, like do midnight runs and rescue things like that?
Right. It that also depends, too. We do get calls directly from people. And as I alluded to earlier, if we take a pet from someone, we do have them sign a contract saying they won't turn around and go buy another exotic cat, that they will no longer own them. But these days, it's much more common for us to be involved with other national and international rescue groups like the International Fund for Animal Welfare or the Humane Society of the United States. You know, they've gotten word from, you know, a local sheriff or other, maybe USDA or the Fish and Wildlife for a certain state that they're going in and confiscating some cats. For example, last May of 2013, we were brought into a scenario of an owner who had a number of cats, from leopards and lions down to bobcats, and he was in Kansas, Atchison County, Kansas, which is very rural. The man had built some tiny, you know, chain link cages, put all his animals there, and then pretty much walked away.
Oh my God!
Left them to die.
Mm.
Thank God, Atchison County, Kansas, has an amazing sheriff who stepped in with a kind heart and contacted various agencies. I think HSUS was the lead on that. And everyone scrambles then. Okay, we've got six lions, we've got seven tigers, and, you know, for example, three bobcats.
Yeah.
Who has space? Who of you sanctuaries around the country have space, have the wherewithal that you can come get them, and also the financial resources to take care of them for the rest of their lives? It's very expensive to take on a cat. For example, our large cats like lions and tigers, with the excellent nutrition that we give them, as well as the vet care they require, costs us about $10,000 a cat per year.
Wow.
So if we rescue a 10-year-old tiger who in captivity might live another 10 years, that's a $100,000 financial commitment that we're taking on by rescuing one cat.
Wow.
Yes, yes. So back to Atchison County, Kansas, just to finish up that little story.
Yeah.
We went there and we took back, you know, literally we get in our truck, we have transport cages, we drive 24 hours. When I say we, you know, I'm not one of the rescuers, but we have the trained keepers and our master keepers who go, about three or four. We also take usually one of our volunteer vets with us so that we can on-site quickly check the cats out and see how they are doing. In the case of these Kansas cats, they were starving to death and living, you know, in tiny, dilapidated cages, pretty much in their own feces.
Mm.
So we tried to, you know, quickly get them. And one thing, just in a way, you know, a good thing for us, is that they quickly run to us when we lay down food and jump in our cages. Let me get the heck out of here,
totally. You know.
So we brought home a number of cats that day, and the first owner, for all of his faults, obviously had some sense of humor because he'd named them all after Gilligan's Island characters. Yes. So we now have the Skipper, and we have Gilligan, and we have Lovey and Thurston Howell III,
awesome,
who were buddies, and they are, you know, together, just like in the show. We have everybody but the professor. I'm not sure what happened to the professor.
Aww. Oh, I love it. Well, Susan, we have to take a 1-minute break for station identification, but hang on and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Philip and Lloyd. Keep on moving.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And we are back. I am talking to Susan Bass of Big Cat Rescue. Susan, I have a question for you. How many big cats do you think there are in the U.S. at this point?
Amazingly enough, no one knows.
Wow.
No one. No governmental agency, not the USDA, not the Wildlife Service. No one knows. We estimate, and again, you can see estimates anywhere from 5,000 to 20,000 of these big cats are living in people's backyards as pets.
Holy cow. I mean, it's like, you know, it's funny because I've worked on farms, I've had horses, I've worked with dogs and cats and vets and exotic animals, but like, you know, normal animals. I mean, I can't imagine how incredibly dangerous it would be to have a lion in your backyard, you know, and like, I just don't even understand the mentality to think that this would be a good idea.
Right, right. There are certain people, we believe, that think that, you know, it's cool to have something different. They don't want the run-of-the-mill. If I tell you, hey, Celia, if you want to come over to my house for dinner tomorrow night, I'll introduce you to my pet lion. You, of course, are going to have a reaction like, you're lying,
yeah.
You know? And a lot of people also, they'll be like, you know, well, you know, I have a special bond with this lion, but it would be dangerous for you to have a lion.
They
want to sort of feel special about it. So.
Totally. That's what I kind of feel is like that a lot of the people that have these, like, that have wild animals as pets, somehow believe that, you know, it's this born free bond or, you know, this movie moment. And it's, I had a friend when I was growing up that rescued a baby raccoon. And the thing became her best friend and it would sit on her shoulder on a leash and it would come to high school with her and all this. And it hit puberty and one day it was sitting on her shoulder and attacked her like, I mean, not to be believed. She wound up with multiple stitches. I mean, she was messed up, you know, but it's like, it's not tame. Just because you bottle fed it doesn't mean that this is now a domestic animal. And that's
exactly.
The part that really scares me, because I think people just think that, you know, oh, well, if I love it, it'll love me too. But instinct runs deep.
Right. That's very true. These big cats, they are hardwired, their instincts to go after, you know, prey. So someone, you know, there are a few people you can see videos on, you know, the internet these days, and you see like a grown man like hugging a lion. You're like, wow, that is so cool. How does he get to do that? Well, he might be doing that now, but at some point, that lion could very well turn on him.
Yeah.
You just never know. They've got triggers inside them that, you know, can never be completely tamed.
Mm-hmm.
As a sanctuary, Big Cat Rescue, we are very much against, you know, people owning these cats and thinking that they make great pets. In fact, we are, you know, instrumental in trying to get federal legislation passed right now, which is pending in both the House and the Senate, called the Big Cats Public Safety Protection Act, and that would actually stop people, you know, phase out people from owning these cats and keeping them in backyards outside of a few certain exemptions, such as AZA-accredited zoos and accredited sanctuaries such as ourselves.
And so how is that all going in terms of litigation? Is it coming through, or...?
It's not so much litigation, it's getting the House and the Senate to pass the bill, mm-hmm. and then it will become a law. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing really about how bills became laws, you know, since maybe my sixth grade ethics class or something.
Yeah, if it wasn't
got
for
involved
like those...
with all this. But it really is very interesting on both the House and the Senate side that bill is introduced and then you try to get co-sponsors. So with the House of Representatives, because there are districts within states, there are over 500 members of the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. whereas there are only 100 senators because each state has two, period.
Mm-hmm.
So we are doing really well on the House of Representatives side. I think we are up about 120 co-sponsors right now. And a co-sponsor basically means when the bill becomes before the Congress to pass, you're kind of saying, I support this bill, and it's very likely I will vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the House rep for that area. But we're always looking for people to contact their U.S. senators and their House of Representatives and say, hey, you know, did you know about this bill? This is important to me. When you were talking earlier about how scary it is to think someone owns a lion, I actually think it's scarier to think maybe someone three doors down from me owns a lion and I don't know it.
Seriously.
For example, here in Florida, we have hurricanes.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, they have tornadoes. And if you've got somebody living down the street from you and they've got a lion in a, you know, ramshackle cage as it is, and a tidal wave, you know, if it's on the water, an earthquake, anything like that, Mother Nature comes through, and that lion is suddenly out and about walking through the neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
It's very scary, and it's also a huge waste of resources for first responders.
Yeah.
We have one lioness, her name is Nikita, and she came from a crack house in Tennessee.
Oh, my God.
So imagine the, you know, officers when they showed up to deal
wow.
with the drug dealers in the house, and they wow. came face-to-face with a full-grown lion.
Wow.
You know, it's very scary on their part. So there's a number of reasons that we believe it really makes no sense for, you know, people off the street, the general public, with, you know, very little training on how to take care of these animals, and especially the safety issues to own them as pets.
Yeah, I mean, I could only imagine that, you know, if you have, like, a small child or a dog or a cat, you know, and you've got this wild cat in your backyard, I mean, anything small is going to be toast.
Right.
So it's kind of, it amazes me that someone would think this is a good idea. But
it's true.
I live in Brooklyn and I have an apartment, so it would never work, you know? But it is. I'm fascinated that someone would look at a tiger and be like, you know what? I want one of those. This is a great idea.
Right, right. And, well, part of that reasoning is propagated because you can go to state fairs, county fairs, sometimes the malls. Even some exhibitors will set up in strip center parking lots. And I'm talking all around the country. And you, for $10, $15, $20, they have baby cubs for people to pet and have a picture taken with. So if you're, you know, there is literally nothing cuter in the world than a 2 or 3 month old lion or tiger.
Yeah, yeah.
They are beyond ridiculous. And if you have the chance to get your picture taken, you think, wow, this is so great. What, you know, what could hurt? What could it hurt? And they're so cute. Gosh, I wish I had one as a pet.
True.
But what people don't realize is that they don't stay little very long.
Yeah.
By the time they're 3, 4 months old, they're already very dangerous and, you know, have the teeth and the claws and just continue to grow. And the caging, the, you know, the food, the medical care, you can't go on vacation. You can't call someone up and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go on a cruise for a week. Would you mind watching my lion for me?
Really? Just call your pet sitter. No problem.
Right, right. So there are a number of exhibitors all over this country that continually breed these cubs for lifetimes in a cage just to make money off them when they're really little.
Yeah.
And that's sad because they can only use them as photo props in these kind of, you know, pet cub petting schemes, as we refer to them,
mm-hmm.
till they're about 3 months old. Then they're too old. And as I was mentioning earlier, a captive lion or tiger can live well into his
20s. Yeah.
So they're money makers for 3 months, then they're a huge liability for 20 years.
Wow. Wow. Actually, you know, it's funny because you brought this up, because right before the interview, I found out that a popular website by the name of Tinder, it's a dating site, has this thing now where people's portraits or their photos on the page, everybody's posing with a tiger.
Yes.
And I don't know. Do you know what this is about?
It's, again, about appearing special, different,
yeah,
and cool.
Yeah.
There are a couple other sites, too. OkCupid, I believe, is another one. And it's mainly the males on the sites. They decide if the women are, you know, scrolling through, looking to see who they might be interested in, it stops your, you know, scrolling and catches your attention if you see a guy smiling and he's, like, leaning against a full-grown tiger or holding a tiger cub.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. But now, from what I understand, it's become so prevalent, something like 5-10% of all of these profile pictures on these sites for the men are holding these cubs. The state of New York actually has just been the very first state within the last month, maybe even less time than that, to pass a law saying no more tiger selfies.
Yay! All right,
yes,
New York.
Yay, New York.
Wow. I mean, it's so funny because, I mean, I hadn't heard anything about that. And literally found out 5 minutes before we started talking, and it was like, what is this about? But you're right. I mean, it's like dangerous, sexy man because he's got a tiger. You know, it's the whole Tarzan fantasy, I guess.
Right. Exactly. I'm not just your average guy that's going to take you to a movie. You know, not that they own these cats generally, but again, there are a lot of exhibitors making money by, you know, charging these guys to have these pictures taken. And that doesn't just happen here in the United States as well.
Mm.
There are a number of places in other states like South Africa,
yeah,
Mexico, Thailand come to mind. They are probably the most notorious, if you will, for having, people petting cubs, touching adult tigers. There is a place called the Tiger Temple in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of T's right there.
Yeah, really.
And, it's actually run by monks. So you think, oh, my gosh, you know, monks, how this must be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
But there are a number of reports that the animals are, they're so docile, they're not going to bite anyone because they're heavily drugged.
Oh, okay.
And it's a pretty sad route. If you just, you know, go Google it, Tiger Temple, tigers, drugs, and
mm-hmm,
a lot of things will pop up. So
wow,
you'll see a lot of them on Tinder, you know, leaning against an adult tiger, and you're like, wow, where is that happening?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've seen something about the monks before, and, like, just saw it very quickly, and was like, wow, that's amazing, and then just kept going. But, yeah, I mean, I saw a picture of, like, a small child lying on top of a tiger, and it was like, this is just not, like, something's not being told here. It's like there's
right,
no way that a cat would allow someone just to lie on top of it. So, all right, well, let's get back to the sanctuary. So when you guys rescue a group of cats together, do they remain together at Big Cat Rescue?
They generally do. Again, like I said, every situation is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But when we rescue cats together who appear to be getting along well, we do try to keep them together if they have not been spayed or neutered. For example, if it was, you know, a boy and a girl cat together and the original owners were trying to breed them,
mm-hmm,
then we would immediately separate them and have them neutered.
Mm-hmm.
One example comes to mind is we have kind of fan favorites, if you will. It's a male lion named Cameron and a white tiger female named Zabu.
Mm.
And, of course, in the wild, you would never see, well, you wouldn't see a white tiger in the first place.
Yeah.
But you certainly wouldn't see a tiger and a lion being best friends and living together. But the owners who had them as cubs up in New England were raising them together so they would be familiar with each other, and they hence did become very best friends. But they were going to try to breed them to have white liger cubs.
Mm.
Again, just another step, you know,
yeah,
having a tiger for a pet is one thing. Having a liger is even more odd and different and makes me special and unique because I have this.
Totally.
So we don't think that they did produce any cubs, but of course, as soon as we got Cameron and Zabu back, and they're like Brangelina, they're Cambu. They're Cambu now.
I have to come see you guys. I love this place.
Yes, they're really cute. And they're real stars of our videos, too. You can look at a lot of our videos of them. But what's interesting, people don't realize, with a lion, if they are neutered, they will actually lose their mane and their ability to roar.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, it's very different. So we, of course, you know, took all this into consideration. We were deciding what to do with Cameron and decided the best thing would be to give him a vasectomy.
There you go.
So
oh,
he would be able
wow.
to keep his mane.
Did it work?
I'm sorry?
Did it work?
Yes, it did work. It did work. It worked for many, many years. They actually came to the sanctuary about 10 years ago now. And because when they first got there, you know, Cameron, being a male lion, was, of course, very protective of his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he did not like people coming anywhere near her. And so she was spayed, and he had the vasectomy, and it did calm him down and, you know, not have him be so anxious for many years until about a year ago.
Mm.
And our keepers noticed that he was getting increasingly anxious and annoyed when people would come around Zabu.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, consulted with our veterinarians and senior keepers and staff and decided that the best thing to do for Cameron would be to go ahead and neuter him.
Mm-hmm.
And it has made the world of difference. He has now completely lost his mane. But if you think about it, he's in Tampa, Florida, where it's like 90 degrees
yeah.
most of the time. So he's loving it.
Yeah, totally.
He's cooler.
And he's happier.
Yes, he's very happier. And Zabu could care less. She still loves him.
That's great.
Yes, they're really, really cute together.
Wow. So how large is the rescue? Do any cats get to roam around the property?
They don't run around the property, obviously, because they're wild.
Yeah.
But they do have various sizes. For example, some of our big cats have as much as 3 acres of what they call their cat attack.
Oh, nice.
Right. And then, like I mentioned earlier, something like a sand cat, it only weighs a couple pounds. There are little tiny cats that are from, like, the desert,
mm-hmm.
hence the sand cats. And so, you know, they might have a 1,200-square-foot area the size of a small house, but to them, it's massive.
Hey, that's bigger than my apartment. I'll take it.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Yes, a sand cat's living in, you know, a bigger spot than you have. So, and one of the things we did last year, which was kind of interesting, with captive cats or captive animals in general, one of the biggest concerns is always boredom.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they have a nice, you know, 2-acre place to run around, let's say, it's the same 2 acres.
Yeah.
They need enrichment, mental stimulation. We do that in a couple various ways. We have an enrichment committee, so at least twice a week, every single cat, and we have about 102 cats right now, I think, they get some form of enrichment. And that can be as simple as putting, you know, spices in a paper bag or catnip in a paper bag and letting them roll around on it,
mm-hmm.
giving them a paper tube. We like to say a cat is a cat is a cat because they're very similar to house cats and that they just love rolling around and, you know, playing with anything new.
Uh-huh.
And then during the holidays, for example, they get Christmas trees, they get butterball turkeys at Thanksgiving, which of course is their favorite, being carnivores.
Love it.
Yeah. They like the Thanksgiving a lot more than Halloween. The pumpkin, they're like, it's a pumpkin.
Yeah, I saw one of your videos where they were being given Christmas presents, and I don't remember if it was a lion. I think it was a lion that ran up and was so excited and, like, grabbed one and dragged it off, and it was really, really cute. And I love that you guys do that because, I mean, the enrichment is so important to keep them healthy. You know, everyone,
exactly, exactly. And even someone just walking by, you know, their enclosure is, you know, ooh, who's that, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of got off track there. What I was saying earlier, something we started last year was what we call a vacation rotation. So now on top of their regular permanent enclosures, each cat goes, right now the big cats, which would be our leopards, lions, and tigers,
mm-hmm.
they all take turns taking 2-week vacations in this 2.5-acre special area that we developed.
Oh, that's great.
It's really neat. We built special platforms. There's a pond. Tigers like to swim. I don't know if you knew that. So they get in there and they play around. There's like a you know, fountain, and they jump around. There's dens so they can hide.
Cool.
And they just have the best time. It's open air. It's about 20 foot high walls.
Wow.
Of course, they can't get out, but they can see right up. They're in trees. They can rub up against, and they just have the best time. So it's cute. Now, you know, something I always think is funny is I'll look online, and, you know, for the volunteers, it'll say, you know, sort of the updates for the day, and it'll be like, you know, Nikita is on vacation. I just always cracks me. I'm like, okay, Nikita's on vacation.
Good for her.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh, I love it. So do you have a favorite cat?
I have a couple favorite cats. I have a favorite tiger, and his name is Bengali, Ben for short.
Oh, cute.
And he is just a doll. He's very friendly. I think he's pretty much a favorite of many, many people. I can't claim him as just being mine.
Mm-hmm.
But when tigers are happy, they make this noise with, they kind of puff out their lips. It's called chuffing.
Uh-huh.
And it probably can't do it across the phone. It'll sound weird. But it's kind of like, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, anytime you walk by Bengali, he yawns and he rolls around and he, you know, chuffs at you and almost talks. He's just so cute.
Oh, cool.
And then two favorite cats are bobcats. One of them is Marianne. She comes from the Gilligan group.
Oh,
that came from Kansas. A bobcat named Marianne.
I love it.
And when she got here, unlike a lot of our cats, who by the time we get them and are able to rescue them, they've been in very bad conditions or not gotten proper nutrition for many years.
Mm-hmm.
They're older. They've got, you know, joint issues. They might need surgery or some teeth removed. Marianne showed up. She was only about, you know, 3 years old. So she was really young and full of energy. And, of course, she, you know, she was not, each one of the cats from Kansas had their own you know, area, except for Gilligan and Skipper were together, and Thurston Howell III and Lovey were together. I know, yes. So we had also rescued, previously in 2011, a male bobcat named Max.
Hmm.
Max came from Rhode Island, where it is illegal to have a bobcat as a pet, but someone ordered him over the internet anyway.
Whoa.
And when the owner took the took Max to the vet took one look at him and said, "This is not a domestic cat. This is a bobcat. It's, you're not allowed to have him here in the state of Rhode Island."
Yeah.
The owner proceeded to actually have a long, drawn-out legal battle trying to keep Max. But at the end of the day, we said, "We will rescue Max. We will take him and give him a permanent home."
Nice.
All of our cats primarily, you know, live out the rest of their days at Big Cat Rescue, with one exception. But so again, Max was young. He was like 1 year old when he got
wow.
to us, maybe one and a half. And so he had a lot of energy. So, and Max and Marianne, how cute is that? The little names even like
they really
know, go together. So this year on Valentine's Day, we introduced Max and Marianne, and now they are the best cuddle buddy friends
aww.
In the world. So, and it's that's a form of mental enrichment for both of them.
Because
they run around together, they play together, they climb trees, they hide from each other, they, you know, spit at each other, and, you know.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, so, and it's funny because Max was always my favorite bobcat, because I actually went to Tampa International Airport when he arrived in the you know, coach seating on Southwest Airlines.
Nice.
Back in the day, along with our president, who brought him in a big dog carrier, because he wasn't that big at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He probably only weighed about 20 pounds or so.
Wow.
But they're just adorable. So Max and Marianne would have to be my other favorite
couple. Oh, they sound lovely. So, sadly, we're running out of time. However, two last questions for you. The first one is, what are things that our listeners can do to help out Big Cats and Big Cat Rescue?
The number one thing that we try to explain to people when they come on tours, we have educational walking tours throughout the sanctuary most days of the week, is don't pay to touch, hold, pet, feed, swim with, or have your picture taken with a cub. It looks adorable, but that 10 minutes that you spend with that cub can equal a lifetime abuse for the animal.
Wow.
It kind of goes back to what I was saying before. You know, they are only money makers for the first few months.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times we don't know what happens to them.
Mm. Oh, my God, that's so sad.
It is sad. And it's something that can easily be stopped as soon as this Big Cats of Public Safety Protection Act is passed, because not only will it phase out the private ownership of these cats, but it would ban the public from having direct contact with a cub. So you couldn't, you know, pay to go to your, you know, Iowa State Fair
right.
and hold a tiger cub for $25, for example.
Right. Wow.
Yes, that would be the number one thing that people can do.
Okay, cool. And then you guys are all over the internet. You guys are everywhere. So I would love if you could list your contact info, the app info, all that stuff, so everybody can find you and do more research if they'd like to.
Oh, sure. We have about 9,000 pages on our website, so if somebody, like, can't sleep well,
seriously,
just go bigcatrescue.org, which is easy to remember, and we've got everything on there. There's information on how to visit the cats. There's information on how to get involved, and I don't mean just, you know, donating money, but things as simple as signing up for Amazon Smile, which is the charity arm of Amazon.com. If you can list any charity in there, we pick one charity, and if you pick Big Cat Rescue, a percentage of anything you buy on AmazonSmile.com goes to Big Cat Rescue.
Yeah, that's great.
And if you want to donate to a different charity, please do. There's a million on there, and everybody, you know, can benefit. It's a great thing that Amazon's doing. We recycle ink cartridges. There's a million things that people can do, including sign petitions, let their U.S. senators and representatives or wildlife commissioners know about, you know, issues that are going on with cats in the various states. We put out an e-newsletter called The Advocat each month, and you can go online and sign up for that. We also put out a quarterly newspaper, which is mailed and also online. If you go to our website and you hit the news peg across the top,
mm-hmm.
it'll pop up, and it has, you know, years worth of old issues of our newsletters and our Big Cat Times, which is the quarterly publication. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, as you mentioned earlier. The easiest way to remember our YouTube channel is bigcattv.com. And really, just, we're kind of social media mavens, so if you just enter Big Cat Rescue on your browser, a lot of that will come up, or go to our website, and there's a million links. If anybody has any questions about big cats, or if you say, oh, wow, you know, I saw some big cats at the, you know, gas station the other day, and someone was charging people, because like I said, these exhibitors will set up anywhere and start charging. info@bigcatrescue.com is a great email address, and if it pertains to the cats, it'll get to me, or if it pertains to anything else, it'll get to the right person and we'll respond.
Awesome. I love what you guys do. Thank you so much for talking to us. And
thank you
so much for everything that you guys do, and the amount you're educating people and saving these poor big cats and giving them a good life and all that. I hope that law goes through real soon, because, like I said, I'm just gobsmacked that, you know, that this isn't completely illegal everywhere, you know, but yeah.
We get that a lot.
I can only imagine. And as you were talking, you know, through this interview of Kansas, Rhode Island, you know, and all over the place. And it's just like, wow, this really is a national issue. You know,
right.
I had no idea.
You, you know, bringing me on today to talk about this, because educating people is the key. People always say, I had no idea XYZ was happening with big cats.
Well, I've been researching you guys for about a month now, and I mean, I just learned so much that I feel like I didn't research you at all. So thank you so much for talking to us. Animal Instinct is now on Facebook, and thanks to everyone at Big Cat Rescue for doing what you guys do. Please keep fighting the fight. Thank you, Heritage Radio Network, for letting me have this show, and next week we will be back. I will see you then. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.